Part 7 of Rainbow Children, Mellow, and the larger work itself, we're going to be juxtaposing the entire consciousness of Prince at that moment with his trajectory of growth over the next decade, and in particular with his work Art Official Age from 2014. For example, the lines, "I woke up in the city in a bit of a rage, determined to free my mind from this art official cage, taught by taught my teachers taught from an early age, a place in heaven, far off in the future. Come on, let's go. Free the people. Come on, let's go. Art official cage, ghettos to the left of me, malls to the right. Why is my kingdom only come in prayers at night? What should I expect if I'm not willing to fight? A place in heaven, somewhere in the future, artificial cage. Come on, let's go. Free the people. Come on, let's go." I mean, you can't be more clear than that. And to my dismay, from the perspective of what I missed out on, I have discovered in exploring his lyrics a lot that this that he was also very, very clear that he understood that this is fascism. He called it a veiled form of fascism in colonized mind. So it's not so much that his understanding of the fact that this is fascism changed, but what has changed was his development of a strategy. And we're going to be thinking more about that. Or I should say, the development of his strategy, because he clearly has a strategy. And I think a very powerful one expressed in the Rainbow Children. Continuing with our reading of Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, What is Property? Quote, "Man is born a social being. That is, he seeks equality and justice in all his relations, but he loves independence and praise. The difficulty of satisfying these various desires at the same time is the primary cause of the despotism of the will and the appropriation which results from it. On the other hand, man always needs a market for his products." And I have to comment that on both these two points, we supposedly needing markets and praise, we have to revisit that earlier note I posted, which insists that class, far from it defining us, means a negation of our freedom, and so an abomination to be ended, so we can once again discover who we are, when we are as earth intended. Continuing. "Unable to compare values of different kinds, he is satisfied to judge approximately according to his passion and caprice, and he engages in dishonest commerce." Again, this, keep in mind, this is the class-defined human. Continuing, "which always results in wealth and poverty. Thus, the greatest evils which man suffers arise from the misuse of his social nature." And I, of course, would modify that when folks talk about man within a class system, they're talking about the man. They're talking about the power guys. The power guys have most deaf misused our social nature. We absolutely need society, need each other. We're communal, we're social. And they exploit that by making it something we can acquire only if we go through them. Continuing. And therefore participate in our own continuous re-enslavement. Continuing. Thus, the greatest evils which man suffers arise from the misuse of his social nature, of this same justice of which he's so proud, and which he applies with such deplorable ignorance. The practice of justice is a science which, when once discovered and diffused, will sooner or later put an end to social disorder by teaching us our rights and duties. And reading that out loud is very suggestive to me. I think we want to think more about that, this notion of once we discover this science of the practice of justice. Is there a way to translate that into the language of freedom? I want to think about that. Continuing, this progressive and painful education of our instinct, this slow and imperceptible transformation of our spontaneous perceptions into deliberate knowledge, does not take place among the animals, whose instincts remain fixed and never become enlightened. And I'm actually going to skip this quote from F. Cuvier, Introduction to the Animal Kingdom. For time considerations, we want to hear from Proudhon. I do, himself. Continuing with Proudhon, intelligence and instinct being common, then, though in different degrees, to animals and man, what is the distinguishing characteristic of the latter? According to F. Cuvier, it is reflection, or the power of intellectually considering our own modifications by a survey of ourselves. Now, this lacks clearness, says Proudhon, and requires an explanation. If we grant intelligence to animals, we must also grant them, in some degree, reflection. For the first cannot exist without the second, as F. Cuvier himself has proved by numerous examples. But notice that the learned observer defines the kind of reflection which distinguishes us from the animals as the power of considering our own modifications. This I shall endeavor to interpret by developing to the best of my ability the laconism of the philosophical naturalist. The intelligence acquired by animals never modifies the operations which they perform by instinct. It is given them only as a provision against unexpected accidents which might disturb these operations. In man, on the contrary, instinctive action is constantly changing into deliberate action. Thus, man is social by instinct and is every day becoming social by reflection and choice. At first, he formed his words by instinct. He was a poet by inspiration. Today, he makes grammar a science and poetry an art. His conception of God and a future life is spontaneous and instinctive, and his expressions of this conception have been, by turns, monstrous, eccentric, beautiful, comforting, and terrible. All these different creeds, at which the frivolous irreligion of the 18th century mocked, are modes of expression of the religious sentiment. Some day, man will explain to himself the character of the God whom he believes in and the nature of that other world to which his soul aspires. All that he does from instinct, man despises. And once again, we're talking class bound here. Man despises, or if he admires it, it is as nature's work, not as his own. This explains the obscurity which surrounds the names of early inventors. It explains also our indifference to religious matters and the ridicule heaped upon religious customs. Man esteems only the products of reflection and reason. The most wonderful works of instinct are, in his eyes, only lucky godsends. He reserves the name discovery, and I almost said, he says, creation, for the works of intelligence. Instinct is the source of passion and enthusiasm. It's intelligence which causes crime and virtue. And I interject here, as Popper suggests, however, it is the split mind, body, instinct, reason. It is the split which is distinctive of class, and we must not mistake this split for some necessary stage, quote unquote, on the road to the triumph of heart and mind united in some, and Prince comes to mind. In some, and Prince comes to mind, they already are united. No, the issue is regaining what was stolen from us, our wholeness. Reading this, Proudhon, while always these days thinking about both Nikola Tesla and Prince, I'm struck, as I have frequently been while reading this, by the deep insight Proudhon possesses. And though he's no doubt right in his observation about the really fear and revulsion with which the mind-worshipping abandoned children of class look upon mystery, what Proudhon calls instinct, once these sad folk got organized and became consciously Plato's tribe and began amassing resources to realize Plato's vision, they were able to take matters a few steps further and manifest it in practical, strategic terms and actively suppress these works of the reality of instinct, of the body speaking, hustle them from our eyes, as they did with Nikola Tesla, for obviously many additional reasons, and as they're trying to do with Prince, and as they did with Proudhon himself.